This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Yak! Baseball season right now is, well, how do we describe this? It's in its coldest, darkest, quietest point that it is. During a calendar year. Hello and welcome back to the Extra Bases Podcast. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com, and you're listening to another installment of the Extra Bases on the yak.com/Austin. And this is a baseball-centric podcast. And right now, we are in the I woke up the other day early for National Signing Day to get started on our coverage and following on the sign letters of intent that came in. It was like 42 degrees and very, very foggy. We've had an unusual amount of fog in Austin, and I saw some photos from Houston and places like Louisiana as well. Incredible photos, but just of the fog. And it's one of those mornings where you look outside and you're like, it's cold, it's foggy, it's damp, it's been raining off and on. Just put me back to bed, man. Let me sleep a few more hours and get through this and wake up where it's sunnier and more vibrant and you've got some more energy. That's baseball right now. Whether it's college baseball, Major League Baseball, we're in that phase where you look around and it's cold, it's foggy, it's dark, it's damp, and you just want that period to pass quickly and get to some brighter time. So Texas baseball team in its off season to the fullest. They're not really doing anything right now on campus. Students are wrapping up finals if they haven't already. December 20th, they really, I would assume that the last finals probably happened earlier this week based on my days taking a lot of finals at the University of Texas. Keyword taking. I did not say excelling at those finals, but keyword taking those finals. So Texas baseball team will get back going once those guys get back on campus, or probably a little bit before that as guys make their way back earlier before classes start, getting some work in, things like that. One thing we'll be talking about with the Longhorns when that time comes around is how they're going to narrow their roster down. They're way over the limit right now, and they're over the limit in a way that doesn't make it easy just to slash some guys from the roster. They have some intriguing walk-on players. That's the nature of the scholarship limits in college baseball. And when you're a program like Texas, you can in a state like Texas, you can still attract really high-quality high school and junior college baseball players that are basically preferred walk-ons that want an opportunity to try to earn a spot at Texas. And if they don't, they move on to a JUCO or another school or something else as word gets out about those guys. Because a lot of these guys will play in the scrimmages in the fall as well. And maybe a San Jacinto plays Texas and sees a guy that, hey, if that guy doesn't make the roster, we'd like to have that guy at San Jacinto. So they're over the limit with some quality pieces, or at least some intriguing pieces, particularly with all of the pitchers that they have. They're probably going to have to cut loose a couple of guys that would pitch in the bullpen for some other teams in the Big 12, or find a home in some rotation in a junior college or another lower tier Division I program or something like that. So that's something that we'll get into and talk about a lot more as the season gets closer and as their preseason fully gets going, is just how they're going to cut down that roster. What will they do in terms of getting to under that limit, and who ends up being on the wrong end of that, which will make a lot of the preseason practices. There's always competition. There's competition in the fall for spots. There's competition in the preseason. Maybe even more intense as these coaches are putting a few guys under the microscope and trying to figure out what exactly they're going to do to get their roster to a certain limit. So the good news for Texas is that they have a lot of options. There's been some rosters in years past where you're looking at, six or seven guys at the end of that active roster, and they're like, ugh, Yeah, these guys aren't really quite Texas caliber. So that the good news is that the roster is in a very healthy area. Although it's definitely young in some spots, it's definitely in a healthy situation. And then recruiting is going well for the Longhorns as well. I think I mentioned this on last week's podcast, the 2020 infielders they have committed. Or maybe I didn't. Maybe that was a radio interview. Well, I'll repeat it again. The 2020 infielders they have committed, they just got a commitment from Mitchell Daly, an infielder from Alabama, who had a lot of big offers, probably more money to these places than Texas, ended up picking Texas. But I know Clemson really, really wanted him, and Clemson is tough to beat recruiting. That speaks to how good he is. He committed to Texas just a few days after Tanner Witt out of Episcopal in Houston, who I believe I just saw Prep Baseball Report updated their 2020 class of Texas rankings. Texas had three guys in the top nine, and at number six was Tanner Witt. He's listed as a shortstop right now, but he's 6'6". I think that it's just a matter of time before he moves to third. But the bat is the carrying tool. He's one of the best amateur hitters in the state of Texas, even right now, and certainly nationally in the 2020 class. I know some of you will hear that and say, oh no, we're going to lose him. No! I think that he's going to end up going to school. And one of the reasons why is what I just said is that he's probably going to move off shortstop. And that's going to ding his value in the eyes of scouts. He's the athleticism is not an issue, but I know it's not elite athleticism, which, you know, scouts look at when they're projecting a guy in the infield. And I think his father's background will help Texas get him from the standpoint of his you know, father played professional baseball and didn't have the college experience. And I think that that's something that he would want his son Tanner to have. So that was a massive pickup for Texas, getting Tanner Witt. Massive pickup. That's the kind of guy that if he gets on campus, and I think that, those chances are good right now, he's a middle-of-the-order kind of hitter that could really change an offense for multiple years while he's on campus. And oh, by the way, you throw in those guys with some of these other guys that Texas has committed, you know, mainly a guy like Carson Tucker out of Arizona, the younger brother of Cole Tucker, who was a first-round pick of the Pirates a few years ago. One of their top prospects now, coming off a great Arizona Fall League. Tucker, if he makes it to the campus, that's maybe a day one starter. I think that that's a David Hamilton impact kind of player, that type of immediate impact. Certainly, you know, if he's anything like his brother, he's going to be a terrific player. And not to go off on too long of a tangent here, but when I went to the Pirates scouting school back in 2013 or 2014. It's been a while. It was the year that the Pirates took Cole Tucker in the first round and Mitch Keller in the second round. Two guys that have emerged as two of the better prospects in the Pirates system. Keller is one of the top prospects in all of baseball. Those guys were basically had just been drafted, so they send a lot of their draftees to their spring training complex to participate in those Gulf Coast League, Rookie League games. And I had heard, you know, people talk about Cole Tucker and what kind of kid he was and this and that. The presence that guy had and the makeup he has, he's one of those young men that was way more mature than his age. Just, you know, the only guy that came up to me, hey, how are you doing? What's your name? What are you doing here? Oh, cool. You know, asking questions. Just you talk to that guy for 5 minutes and you feel like you've known him for 10 years. That type of genuine personality, and he just had this presence about him. Not to the extreme level people were talking about Derek Jeter or whatever, but I can see why the makeup reports were off the charts with this kid. That's the kind of guy you want in your system, especially when you're drafting a high school player that's going to have to go through the ups and downs as Cole Tucker has. And here he is kind of on the upswing right now. So I've heard his little brother is very, very similar, which is a terrific thing for Texas. Not only is he extremely talented, but the makeup-wise, big-time prospect. So if they get those three guys on campus, and you look at some of the other pieces they have in that 2020 recruiting class, these recruiting classes are starting to stack up. And when you stack recruiting classes like that, that's when you really start to build the type of rosters and success that you're seeing at places right now, like Oregon State, like Florida, like Arkansas. Some of these programs that have just really recruited at an extremely higher level and are getting some big-time guys, both pitchers and hitters, on the mound. So we'll get into to all the roster discussion and all those things more as we get closer to the beginning of the season, because right now it's really difficult to even project how those things could shake out. As I said, recruiting is still full steam ahead. Those guys do a terrific job in recruiting. I think Texas has definitely reestablished itself as the big dog in the state. And not to say that TCU and Texas A&M aren't kind of in that same level, but there was a time a few years ago where Texas was clearly behind those guys in the pecking order. Texas has reemerged as the top dog in the state, I think. And they've just done a really good job of loading up in those 2019, the 2019 class, the 2020 class, and getting a lot of quality guys that have a chance to get on campus too, which obviously is important. So again, we'll get more into the roster discussion as we get closer to the preseason. Again, you're listening to the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from OrangeBloods.com, and I mentioned this is the slowest period right now for baseball. If you're not watching the Dominican League or the Venezuelan League, which the Venezuelan League had an intense fight last night, benches clearing situation. You know, it wasn't one of those ones where some guys just run into the middle of the field and talk and maybe exchange a shove or two. This thing was legit. So go online and find that. I don't get to do it as much as I used to because I'm married now and I've kind of grown out of that. Just frankly, I'm often very busy, whether it's podcasts or writing or whatever, or being a husband. I used to watch a lot of the winter leagues this time of year, and one of my favorite reasons why I did that was because of the crowds. The crowds are incredible. These people get big into it, and there's a lot of major league guys or guys that are trying to compete for MLB roster spots on those rosters. So it's very entertaining. If you're really starved for baseball, you can find a lot of those streams online as those seasons wipe down those winter league seasons. But yeah, you know, I was thinking of the just going through and reading earlier today, just the MLB hot stove stuff and free agency and trades and all those things. And we'll get into the Astros signing of Michael Brantley in a second, because I think it raises some interesting questions about the Astros, not in a negative fashion, but just in terms of a roster construction. And I was thinking about Major League Baseball right now, and it reminded me the other day, I don't cook often. I'm not very imaginative when it comes to coming up with dishes. Although the other day I did a surf and turf salad, which I know seems it's not that difficult. But hey, I came up with that and executed it, and it was pretty damn good, if I don't say so. I watch shows like Chopped, and I always admire just how creative those people are in crunch time situations to come up with stuff like that. But I do have a few go-to staple items that I can execute well. You know, I despise the Utah Jazz, especially when I was growing up. But it's like the pick and roll. I've got a couple things that I can execute really, really well, and I can go to that well when I need to. And one of those things is salmon. I make it really good, just like blackened lemon pepper salmon. Just kind of on the I guess that's the stovetop deal, whatever. I don't know the technical thing for it, but just cooking it on the stove with one of those really thin, like sheet pan type deals that kind of gets some of the oily stuff off there, whatever. Well, anyway, I was trying to think of it. I had an aha moment about, you know, just where Major League Baseball is right now. And it's like when you cook a big piece of salmon, that's not just the center cut. You've got that. It's just one of those slabs that they kind of cut from a huge piece of fish. You go to like HEB or whatever, and the edges cook quick. You got to be careful and cut those edges and those pieces off, so because you don't want to overcook salmon. That's the worst. It's not a good texture. It's not a good taste. So you've got to really watch how those uneven spots cook. And then the center part always takes way longer. Just that thick center part always takes way longer, and that makes up a majority of the piece of the fish. So Major League Baseball to me right now, it's free agency and all its trades and everything like that are those outer edges that are cooking or have already cooked. And then we've got this huge center cut part of the fish. And it's taking much, much, much longer than the rest of those smaller pieces. That's where we are with baseball right now. I mean, the Manny Machado and Bryce Harper thing, you know, if I would have told you as a baseball fan 10 years ago that you're going to have a player of the caliber of a Manny Machado or a Bryce Harper on the open market, there's not even really that. I mean, there's conversation about it, but there's not really, like, we're not hearing about these proposed offers. We're not hearing about these monster deals. We're not hearing about people just competing with each other in an insane way, just splashing money at these guys. It's way different than it used to be. And these are two guys in the primes of their career that have a proven track record. It's not an elite track record. I think some people would be surprised if they look at Machado's offensive numbers. A lot of his value came in the fact that he was an elite third baseman defensively. And then he decided he wanted to play shortstop. But the guy's not chopped liver as a hitter. I think he's a career. His weighted of runs created in his career is, grab it real fast, in his career it's 120. But over the last few years, it's been 111, 135, 131, 103. The 103 was a really weird year. The BABIP was way down. His slugging was down a little bit, even though he had 33 homers. But the walk and strikeout numbers were very similar. And then this year had the big year with 141 weighted runs created, which is a really good season, his best offensive season of his career. For those of you that don't know what weighted runs created is, it's my favorite offensive stat about just a player's individual run production based on what he does as a hitter in totality. So it's one of my favorite things to look at when I'm evaluating a hitter and just what kind of value they are. So, but those are good numbers. They're not massive elite masher numbers. A lot of the value was in the fact that he was, when he made the move to third base, he was a really good defensive third baseman. But still a heck of a player. And the Harper obviously has had some up and down seasons, but when we've seen him, when he's at his best, he's an MVP type of player. Everybody can use a Bryce Harper. Everybody can use a Manny Machado. And yet you hear just these discussions of who's involved in, you know, you haven't really heard much of the money. If anything, you hear now they're going to have to take less than people speculated years ago. It's just fascinating. It's just this MLB hot stove, that big piece of fish, it's just slowly cooking while those other tiny little pieces, you know, the Wilson Ramos, the Robinson Chirinos, Matt Harvey just signed to an incentive-based deal the other day. Trevor Cahill did the same with the Angels. The Angels are loading up on kind of one-year lottery ticket type arms. Not a terrible idea. You know, we had the Patrick Corbin deal a while back. He got his business done right away. Signed for a lot of money, but not a gigantic amount of money relative to some other free agent deals we've seen in the past. Then you got Harper, Machado, and some other guys sitting there, and it's just like it's a slow cook. It's a different, you know, it's like salmon. It's unpredictable how fast it's gonna cook. Like, you know, I'm always cutting it up and looking and seeing, oh, and this part is cooking quicker than this part, and so on and so forth. Because, you know, again, the worst thing in the world is you don't want to overcook that stuff. But that's baseball right now. That's free agency. That's the trade market. That's it. And here we are, and, you know, it's almost Christmas. And Machado and Harper, I don't even know if there's been, like, I know Machado visited a bunch of places recently, most recently the Yankees. We'll get into that in a second. I don't even know if there's been many, like, proposed offers or any, like, there hasn't even been any leaks about that. Like, oh, hey, the Phillies are going to offer him this much money, and that's the main competition. There hasn't even been really much of that either. So it's just fascinating to watch, because we're just kind of in this weird period of baseball right now where organizations are becoming smarter and figuring out more ways to accurately evaluate players and their value and how to build their rosters. And the days of just throwing years of money at free agents to build a roster just because you felt like that was the easiest and best way to do it, those days are in the past. Teams are getting smarter with how they use their money. And I'll be curious to see if Harper, Machado, or both pick the massive deal, the massive money, or they pick the fit. Maybe the White Sox offer Bryce Harper a lot more money than, say, I don't know. Maybe he goes back around to the Nationals. I don't know. Maybe the Phillies on him. Well, let's just say the White Sox offer the most. And we know the White Sox are trending in the right direction, but they've still got a long ways to go, I think. Does he take that money and just, you know, be content being the high-paid guy in that area and hope that that organization goes the direction he thinks? Or does he take less money and go somewhere where it's a better fit and a more immediate chance to contend? I don't know. And speaking of the Machado thing with the Yankees, Brian, I have a lot of respect for Brian Cashman, a lot. I think he's underrated as a general manager, even though I bet if you ask a bunch of people that work inside baseball who are some of the top GMs, I bet he's on a lot of lists. But I just think his perception, because he is at the Yankees, because there were some years way back a long time ago where they're just spending all this money and blah, blah, blah. The way he basically tore down and rebuilt that farm system and that roster in like a year, 2 year stretch and where it is now is incredible. It's remarkable. As much as it makes me sick to say that as a Red Sox fan, Brian Cashman's really good. So Brian Cashman's going to do what's best for the Yankees or what he thinks is a good thing, both in terms of value, the whole economics of the situation, also the roster fit and things like that. But you look at the Yankees infield, you know, Didi Gregorius, Gleyber Torres is an emerging young guy. Miguel Andujar is horrific defensively at third base. But man, is he a big-time hitting talent. And I think let me look up Andujar's numbers right now. Because I would bet you that his offensive numbers last season were on par or better than Manny Machado's. And he is 23 years old. Okay, I was a little off. So his weighted runs created was 128. A lot of that's probably dictated by the 4.1 walk percentage, which is low. But the ISO, 230 ISO, Machado had 241 last year. So that type of young slugging talent. So it's not like the Yankees have an immediate need for Manny Machado. Because if you sign him, what do you do? What do you do with some of those other guys? I mean, I'd have to look and see, but I would assume that a lot of these guys are cheap and under contract for a while. And you're like, oh, the money doesn't matter to the Yankees. Yeah, it does. I mean, they don't want to spend unnecessarily dollars just to send them . Let me pull up this SpoTrack thing here for the Yankees. So, yeah, Miguel Andujar is under team control through 2023, and that's where the list ends. Didi Gregorius is an unrestricted free agent after this season. He's he'll play under arbitration in this year. I'm not sure about Torres. He's not even really listed. I would assume it's team control for a long, long time with him. So if you're the Yankees, let's say that the dollars make sense for you because there's just not a lot of teams coming through with some monstrous offer for him, and you sign Manny Machado, what do you do? Do you trade Didi Gregorius because he's only got – basically he's only under contract for 2019 and then he's a free agent? Do you use Miguel Andujar in a trade piece to make a big move, perhaps for a JT Realmuto or a starting pitcher or something like that? Or do you keep him? I saw a cool report the other day that Adrian Beltre actually reached out to Andujar to say, hey, I want to help you with your defense. And Andujar, I mean, Adrian Beltre was his idol. Imagine that, man. Like, you get a call in the offseason from Adrian Beltre, who just retired, is going to be probably a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he's your idol. And he's saying, hey, man, basically, like, hey, you're a good young talent, great hitter. I know you want to work on being better defensively. Let's work on that. That's going to be a cool move for him. But I mean, is this Ron Washington turning in Scott Hatterberg to the pick and machine? I don't know how quickly you can turn Miguel Andujar into a great defensive player. So what would the Yankees potentially do with him? What would they do with Gregorius? I don't think Torres is going anywhere. Obviously, Torres could play probably in multiple spots in the infield. Does Machado have to play shortstop? Is that where the situation becomes? Like, he's not open to going back to third base in New York? You know, it's not an A-Rod type thing where he's willing to go move to third instead of playing shortstop like he did in Texas? I don't know. I just know. I know Brian Cashman's really smart. I know Manny Machado, as much of a, how do I phrase this in a non-asshole-ish way? Well, let's just say that his Manny Machado's antics were very annoying and visible and might cause some organizations and some clubhouses some pause in terms of throwing a bunch of big money at him. But this is a 26-year-old infielder who has played almost 1,000 career games and is basically halfway to a Hall of Fame career. He's at 30.2 FOR right now. If he stayed on the path he's been on, and let's just say if he moved back to third base, he'd get to a Hall of Fame level and basically, if there's not a gigantic decline, 6, 7, 8 seasons. So basically the length of his deal for the most part before he becomes another free agent again when he's probably 32 or 33 or something like that. This is a you know, big time free agent, a guy that if you pencil him into the lineup for a few years in his prime, you know, could be a big boost. So it's just fascinating to me that I was doing research today before I got on here to do the podcast, and there's just not much going on. And I feel like that's very unusual compared to rewind the clock back 5 or 6 years ago. And I feel like I was so immersed in all the details and reporting of free agency and trades because there was so much more action. And it's a baseball shifting, man. It's shifting. We got our first taste of it last offseason with some of the pitching deals and everything like that. We're getting another taste of it again. One team did make a move recently, and the Astros signed Michael Brantley to a 2-year, $32 million deal. Again, you're listening to the Extra Bases podcast on theact.com. I'm Dustin McComas. Sorry, I grabbed a sip of water here. And I thought that it was a really smart deal for a few reasons. There's not much of a long-term commitment, obviously, 2 years. The Astros needed some left-handed presence in their lineup. When you think about all the righties that they have in their lineup, you know, think about those guys. Springer, Correa, Gurriel, Bregman, Altuve. There was not really much left-handed presence in the lineup besides Josh Reddick. Maybe you can count Tony Kemp, but I don't think it's a given he's on the opening day roster next year just because of the surplus of guys they have, both mainly in the outfield. So they really needed a left-handed bat. And Michael Brantley in his career, his career splits, he is basically, he's a significantly better hitter against righties and lefties. He's not awful against lefties, although 94 weighted runs created, not that good. But 123 against righties, that's a good number, especially with his kind of versatility and potentially his glove that he could bring to the corner outfield spot. It looks like Houston would want to play him in left field, which in that area with that short porch probably allows him to maximize the defensibility he has left. I mean, he's not the defender he used to be. Was that song? Not the man I used to be. He's not the defender he used to be. I have that song stuck in my head now. But the Astros definitely needed a left-handed bat in their lineup somewhere. They had to go get something like that. I think this is a smart deal for the Astros, in that sense. It's not much of a financial commitment. And remember, Michael Brantley, 2014, was basically an MVP-type player. He's had a lot of injuries, but the Astros can kind of cover themselves from the standpoint of, hey, we've got a lot of outfielders. But that brings up an interesting point in What do you do with Kyle Tucker? What do you do with Kyle Tucker? What do you do with Josh Reddick? What do you do with Jake Marisnyk? What do you do with Tony Kemp? What do you do with Tyler White? Not mainly an outfielder, but, you know, another guy that's kind of on that fringe spot between, is he an everyday guy? Is he a platoon guy? Is he a bench guy? What is he? What do you do with this now, you know, surplus of outfielders that the Astros have? I really don't know. That's one thing that made me scratch my head about the Brantley deal is, on one hand, absolutely needed some left-handed presence in the lineup. They had to find that. And I'm not really sure they weren't going to sign Bryce Harper. So I just wasn't going to happen. Although you can make the case he would have been a great fit there. Great fit. Just put him in the corner outfield spot and, you know, make a move somewhere else with one of those other guys, and all of a sudden you got Bryce Harper sitting in the middle line up there with that, with those right-handed bats. Think of that lineup. Oh man, that would be a lot of fun. But what do you do with these outfielders now? Like, I'm looking, you know, Reddick is owed $13 million this year, $13 million the next year, and then he's a free agent. Springer $12 million this upcoming year, team control next year, and then he's a free agent. Brantley not a free agent until 2021, obviously. Derek Fisher, a guy I like a lot. I saw him up close at the College World Series when he was at Virginia. He, to me, is a solid, everyday, regular player. He just really has – he can run. I like his bat-to-ball ability. I think he's going to have some more power in there eventually. What do you do with him? What do you do with Tony Kemp? What do you do with Jake Marisnyk? And then the big one to me is Kyle Tucker, because Kyle Tucker murdered the ball in AAA last year. Murdered it. What happens if he does that again? I know that he was up and down as a big league guy in a short stint, but his bat-to-ball profile suggested that he was pretty unlucky. I mean, I remember looking at one point, I think he had been a couple weeks into the season, and he had a bunch of balls hit over 100 miles an hour that were being caught, and that's bad luck. What do you do if let's just say, well, probably way more when than if, Kyle Tucker goes in AAA and just mashes. But you've got Reddick, you've got Springer, you've got Brantley, and then whatever you do with Fisher, Kemp, Marisnyk. Like, what happens then? And I know they've talked about playing Brantley a Summit first base and DH as well, but you got Yuli Gurriel. There's AJ Reed as well, kind of lurking in the shadows. DH, I mean, you've got a ton of DH options. Tyler White, all those outfielders I've named, Gurriel potentially. I don't know. It's a good thing for the Astros because they have a ton of options. But the Brantley deal makes me wonder how much of that was knowing that they needed a left-handed bat. How much of that was capitalizing on the market, being able to acquire that kind of talent for a 2-year contract? How much of it was maybe they're not as high as some of those outfield guys as we are, which I don't believe, especially as it relates to Tucker. Tucker's only 21 years old. So what all went into that, and how much of it was they feel like they can go make a huge move and potentially use a Tucker? Although it doesn't seem like they'd be willing to do that. You know, when they traded for Gerrit Cole, they dealt from a position of strength because the Pirates wanted some MLB-ready players. So the Astros had a bunch of those guys to use in the trade piece, and they actually got Gerrit Cole for Musgrove, who's going to probably emerge as a really solid number 3 pitcher in Pittsburgh. He was good down the stretch last year. Colin Moran wasn't what everybody thought he was going to be after this, you know, whole he found a swing, launch angle type deal. He was okay. He was a below average everyday third baseman, I think, or platoon guy potentially. And then who else was in that deal? The guy that threw really, really, really hard at the bullpen that didn't really know where it was going. Can't remember his name, and I can't remember it probably because he just wasn't really that good last year. So they dealt from that position of strength. Can they find a team like that wants a Derek Fisher and a Tony Kemp or, you know, a Jake Marisnyk and then maybe one other piece to make it make some sort of big deal. I don't know. I do know that they've been linked again to JT Realmuto from the Marlins, the catcher, who a few podcasts ago I said that they needed to go make a move for him because of how much sense it made. And then literally right after that, they signed Robinson Chirinos. And I'm thinking, well, what the hell? Poor timing. You should guys go trade for this guy. And then they signed Robinson Chirinos to a deal. But they've been linked to Realmuto again. So, I don't know. It's been a not strangely quiet because I think they're just moving at the pace of the market and the pace they want to, but it's been a quiet offseason thus far, besides the Brantley deal in Chirinos for the Astros. And they're sitting here with a lot of intriguing roster options to construct their roster to use for deals or things like that. And I'm really curious to see how that all works out. So they'll definitely be a team to watch moving forward. Again, you're listening to the Extra Bases podcast on theact.com. I'm Dustin McComas. Wrap this up real quick with this final piece of news. This just came out yesterday. Major League Baseball and the Cuban Baseball Federation agreed on a deal that's going to allow Cuban players to come to Major League Baseball without being smuggled. This was reported by Jeff Passan, among others. This is huge news. Huge, because the only way Cuban guys could get to the United States for baseball was to defect. And you've got people, of course, that are trying to exploit that. And, you know, the dangers that come with that process. And I think it's a huge moment for baseball. I think it's a huge moment, not to get too political, but, you know, Cuba and the United States haven't always been on the best terms, especially of late. It's a big moment kind of in the political sense, too, that, you know, the big dog, you know, money-making baseball country can strike a deal with Cuba to basically say, hey, when your players are good enough at a certain age, they're going to be able to play here. And in turn, you guys are going to be able to make a lot of money, because from what I've read based on Passan's report and a bunch of other reports, is it would be similar to the deals that the United States have with places like Japan and Korea. Here, this is what Pap said. In the deal with Cuba, which runs through 2021, players who are 25 years old would receive a mandatory release, allowing them to come to the U.S. Younger players would be released at the CBF, Cuban Baseball Federation's, discretion. So Major League teams would pay a release fee on top of the money owed a player. For those under 25, the fee would be 25%, and only the money paid to the players would count against the team's international signing bonus pool. For those 25 and over who are considered professionals, the fee would be on the sliding scale between 15 and 20%. Basically, it's very similar to the agreements that the United States, Major League Baseball has with Korea and Japan. That whole process, the bonus pool, the international bonus pool, the process of basically saying, hey, this guy's really good. He can play in the major leagues. He wants to play in the major leagues. Let him go to the major leagues. Let us pay you, you know, what's left on his deal and more money as to, you know, to keep your to organization healthy. And the Cuban Baseball Federation could really, really need it. Just go on YahooSports.com and read Passan's report. It's a huge, huge moment, I think, for baseball. You think of some of the guys that have come over recently and some of the impact they have, and you also can go find plenty of stories of just everything that can go wrong with that smuggling process, that human trafficking process, and the defection process. It's however messy you think it is, it's messier and more dangerous. So a big moment for Major League Baseball and Cuba, and maybe between Cuba and the United States. Something that'll definitely be worth following here. Anytime that, you know, there's a big Cuban player, which tends to be all the time, there's at least one or two a year that are really, really good and end up wanting to come over to the United States. So it's something that'll be definitely worth following. That's going to do it for us today. Here I thought I would struggle some with content, and we're basically 40 minutes into this podcast, which, hey, not bad for the slowest slowest baseball time of the year, the coldest, most annoying, put me back in bed and let the clock go a little bit quicker and bring some brighter times part of the baseball offseason. So for Dustin McComas, that's me. In my somewhat makes sense salmon analogy in cooking and baseball, this will wrap up episode 16 of the Extra Bases podcast. I hope you guys have a great Christmas, great holiday season. I hope you spend a lot of time with your family and friends. I hope you get whatever you ask Santa for. I hope you don't go crazy dealing with all the people at the mall or on the roads if you choose to go that route. But the main part is have a good time. Spend some time with those people that you love. And spread some kindness too. You know, not everybody is as fortunate as we are. You know, this time of year, you know, sometimes the little thing can go a long way, whether that's sending somebody a card that you haven't seen in a while, or whether that's, you know, a donation, or whether that's, you know, participating in a food or a toy drive, or just whatever, just every little bit counts. And man, we could use it in this era of our weird, messed up world right now. We could use every little bit of that anybody can provide. So, spread some holiday cheer. Have a good time with your friends and family. Enjoy Christmas. And I'll talk to you guys again next time on the Extra Bases podcast.